Pandemic showed the system that disperses jobless benefits needs a lot of work. I'm David Brancaccio. Fresh data show the number of people filing for unemployment benefits climbed to about 230,000 in the last week. That is higher than expected, but low compared to what we've seen in pandemic times. Let's switch to Chicago, where we find Susan Schmidt. She's head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors. Hi, Susan.
Good morning.
Number of people filing for unemployment benefits, it ticked up last week, and that number was higher than expected. That's not what I want to see.
Well, it's not what you want to see, but it was last week, and that's a holiday week. So data around holiday weeks, notoriously volatile, not necessarily accurate. The market's not going to read into that too much right now.
All right, point taken. Now, the European Central Bank, the big kahuna over there, said it's going to turn off the special pandemic stimulus, you could put it that way, and by next month, July, is going to start hiking interest rates. That's the first time they've done that in 11 years.
That's right. They're having the same issues. Inflation is happening over there. They're seeing price increases, and they're trying to combat that. So they're finally looking at raising interest rates, trying to keep that inflation in check.
And tomorrow on the calendar, consumer price index for May. Inflation, right?
Yes, and that is the number that the market is going to focus on. That consumer price index is the index that the Fed watches to gauge inflation. We're really hoping that that number starts falling, and that's what investors will key on. If it doesn't fall, investors will get increasingly nervous.
All right, Susan Schmidt at Aviva Investors, head of U.S. equities there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, a government auditor says soaring demand early in the pandemic exposed weaknesses in the system. This week, the Government Accountability Office added unemployment insurance systems to its list of programs at high risk for fraud, waste, abuse, and mismanagement. Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has more.
The high risk list of a few dozen federal programs is a red flag that says, prioritize this, says Tom Costa with the GAO.
It's our hope that the program will get more attention and get the transformation that it needs.
Unemployment was added to the list in part because of increasing fraud. The share of improper payments doubled during the pandemic to nearly 19%, amounting to $80 billion.
It did get a lot of money out to people who needed it, but it also meant that a lot of fraudsters were able to enter into that space very quickly and exploit that vulnerability.
Not that these benefits were too easy to get, says Andrew Stettner at the Century Foundation.
We saw incredible delays in people, you know, getting assistance, people being stuck in nether worlds, you know, waiting for weeks or even months.
The GAO reports found decades of underinvestment in personnel and technology led to inefficiencies and disparities. A sample analysis of two states found Black applicants were half as likely as white applicants to receive federal assistance.
We need this system to be fixed and ready for action.
And Stettner says these reports emphasize we shouldn't wait for the next crisis before addressing these problems. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
China reported only about 150 new COVID infections nationwide yesterday, but some pandemic restrictions linger. People in Beijing are allowed to eat inside restaurants again, but officials directed entertainment venues in one district to close down. Meanwhile, the city of Dangdong, bordering North Korea, has been in lockdown for over a month. And in the financial capital of Shanghai, where lockdown was easing, it looks like some limits are back. Here's Marketplace's China correspondent Jennifer Pak, who's been living the lockdown life in Shanghai.
I finally got a manicure last night. It's been hard to book. My nail technician said her back hurts from so many appointments. But it's far better than before, when she was locked down at the salon without pay or much food. For a while, she said she ate nothing but instant noodles. I never want to see instant noodles again, she said. Then a man walked in and said, there's a surprise COVID test for tenants in an hour. There goes my chance to get a pedicure, too. This morning, more mandatory testing in areas, including mine. That's better than residents who say they can't leave home for the next 2 days and need to test frequently for the following 12. One friend says she knows someone who's barely been let out of the apartment block, even though there is no COVID case. They're locked up like they're in a zoo, she says. She's still stocking up on food. Me? I've ordered sanitary napkins, garbage bags, and toothpaste. In Shanghai, where I'm free to go out for now, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
You saw that grim milestone the other day. More than a million people in the U.S. have now died from COVID. Among that million, many parents who are wage earners, parents who had children. Reporter Elisa Roth reports on financial consequences for these households.
It's a Thursday night, and Margaret Garza and her sons are in the car on their way home from grief counseling.
And we just talked about that, how it...
In a moment, she recorded on her phone. Her older son tells her and his brother what they talked about in the session.
It was like basically the only worry I had. It was the worry of the future, like what the future would be like without Dad. Because Dad definitely did have plans.
Julius was 12 when his father died of COVID almost 2 years ago. His little brother Aiden was 10. They're among the estimated more than 200,000 children in the U.S. who have lost a parent or caregiver to the pandemic. For a lot of kids, that's also meant losing the primary breadwinner, which can mean not having enough to eat or having to move. Garza, who lives near San Antonio, says her kids were worried about those things.
One was like, are we moving? Which I said, no, where would we go? This is our house. This is our family. And the other one was like, we're going to be okay, right? And I said, absolutely.
She and her husband had been able to plan and save before COVID, and Garza still has her job. Emily Price is a counselor at the Children's Bereavement Center of South Texas, where the Garza boys go. She says especially for older kids, the financial worries and the emotional ones can be all tangled up.
Dad died and Mom's working on her own, so now I'm going to get a job so I can provide some additional income, or I'm going to not do sports or other activities so I can babysit after school.
And these kids may have more financial issues in the future. Rachel Kidman is a professor in the public health program at Stony Brook University. She says she learned about the long-term effects of losing a parent while studying children whose parents had died of AIDS. She and her colleagues published one of the first articles in a medical journal looking at the issue of children who lose a caregiver to COVID.
There are impacts on their educational attainment. They're more likely then to live in poverty. Suicide is elevated in this population for 25 years after a parent's death.
Kids who lose a parent are also at greater risk of depression, substance use, and other mental health problems. There's a real challenge, though, to helping these families. There's no national system for identifying kids who have lost a caregiver to COVID, so it's left up to the families to tell schools or to look for help. A tough ask for families already struggling. I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
And the CEOs of more than 220 companies have reportedly signed a letter telling the U.S. Senate to take immediate action to reduce gun violence. The publication Axios reports the letter is due for release today. Among the companies Axios says are Dick's Sporting Goods, Levi Strauss, Lyft, Bain Capital, Unilever, the Philadelphia Eagles, and San Francisco Giants. The House of Representatives yesterday passed a package to change the rules governing firearms by a vote of 223 to 204, but the Senate currently is poised to turn this down. I'm David Brancaccio. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.